This episode of Where to Begin With will feature heavy spoilers of the movie 28 Days Later from 2002. If you've never seen the movie before and you want to take part in this episode by submitting in a review, then hit stop, go away, check out the movie, jot down your thoughts and feelings, send them in to me. If, however, you've seen the movie before or you don't care about spoilers, then just keep listening on. Don't say you weren't warned.
Wake up today in hospital. Wake up and I'm hallucinating.
Hello! I've got some bad news.
They're infected.
Infected!
Father.
Infected with nuts!
Oh, I shouldn't have done that.
It's the blood. There's something in the blood.
You never go anywhere alone unless you've got no choice.
Hello?
Listen to me. Only travel during daylight unless you've got no choice.
This really is a bad idea. You know why? It's obviously a bad idea.
We have to leave now.
More will be coming.
They always do.
They're dead, and you're gonna be next.
And welcome back to a brand new episode of Where to Begin With. This is season number four, episode number four, and we are continuing our jaunt through the sci-fi horror oeuvre, I think is probably the best way to put it here. What we're doing in this season is elongating everything out. We can't just capture sci-fi as one element because there are so many delicious little flavours to pick and choose from. It's kind of like a Baskin-Robbins. It's a Baskin-Robbins of genre. So what we're doing is we're taking our time and taking little samples of various different subgenres within the sci-fi horror camp, if you will. And the broad tent that is has given us thus far a little bit of time travel in our horror movies. And if you stick around to the end of the episode, you will hear listener reviews of Last Night in Soho, which was the movie we covered in the previous episode. However, we're taking a different tact. We are going to kind of man-made infection movies now. So man-made virus, man-made cause and effect. Look what you've done, see what you've wrought, and we are kicking this off with 28 Days Later. This is a horror movie that basically needs no introduction. It's widely regarded as the movie that, one, introduces the idea of running zombies, even though it isn't. And we've got to stress that there were movies before that handled this. It's the one that made it prominent, you know, kind of widely regarded as the movie that made zombies scary again. Once again, that's subjective. I know some people are incredibly scared of zombies. And then there's also the debate that comes along with this one as to whether or not they are actually zombies. Danny Boyle himself didn't consider it a zombie movie and didn't actually consider the infected in this movie as zombies. Rather, it was that they are infected by a very contagious virus which makes them go insane and murder with brutal rage. So, yeah, this one is at odds with a lot of pigeonholing, but at the same time is a movie that saw Danny Boyle kind of really sink his teeth into the horror genre full on. Now, I say full on because the guy himself had kind of played in these waters before. If you watch Shallow Grave, which is his directorial debut, you'll find that it's very much a thriller in fact, I would say, with firmly 2 feet planted heavily in the horror genre. It's a very, very tense and unsettling little watch. If you watch Trainspotting is full of elements that I would argue are right in the cusp of horror. You know, there are elements in there that, to this day, the baby on the ceiling scene is terrifying to me. It like stands out as one of those moments that kind of shaped my perception of what could be classed as horror. But if you continued through, even The Beach has very tense elements about it. It's just 28 Days Later is the first movie where he 100% just says, oh, you know what? This is a horror movie. And by God, does he fucking land this one for sure. 28 Days Later is a kind of... it's about a virus that man creates called rage, which I love as a term. And it's kind of... it's wrought upon the world because environmental activists release primates that have been essentially subjected to all the violence that man will create in terms of videos. It's just played back to back. It's like something from A Clockwork Orange. And this rage infection gets out by transference from animal to man through bite. And then we're kind of off to the races from that point. The movie is how it's actually very prominent now, kind of coming out of the COVID world. And actually, I watched this movie during lockdown, and I can assure you right now, it worked on several levels for me. But this movie is kind of the breakdown of society. This is not an original movie by any stretch of the imagination. A lot of the content in here is handled in post-apocalyptic and zombie movies in general, but in this one we're being a bit more insular with it. We follow Cillian Murphy in a very early role for this actor. He's absolutely phenomenal. As he awakes in a hospital from an accident he was involved with, and then we follow him through his realization that the world is not the world that he remembers, and his interactions and meeting of several different characters. Great cast in this one: Brendan Gleeson, Christopher Eccleston, Naomi Harris, Megan Burns. Like, we kind of follow them trying to make their way to safety, and the safety of this one turns out to be a kind of military complex, and this military complex is kind of headed up by this nasty piece of work, Major West, who is trying to essentially detain women and kind of use them as, for lack of a better kind of phrase, breeding tubes to repopulate the world through force, not through choice. And it's the kind of preservation of life to its most disgusting end, and the fight back of our kind of our protagonists to try and escape. This is shot on like a small budget. This was $8 million and ended up grossing more than 10 times that when it was released. A highly, highly, hugely successful movie, but has this really lo-fi aesthetic about it. Part of that's to do with the fact that the studio that released it was more kind of commonly or nominally known for doing smaller budget movies. But two, that's kind of the world that Boyle wanted to operate in. It adds to the grit. If this has got all the sheen, it's one of my kind of biggest pet peeves against the Dawn of the Dead remake. It's not the movie itself. It's more that it looks so clean that I kind of lose a bit of that the world has fallen apart sort of feel. Something weirdly actually that I think Walking Dead, for the most part, from an aesthetical point of view, really captured well, even though the series itself was a bit up and down. I think what you get in this one, on top of all that, is some primo writing here. So you have behind the movie, you have Danny Boyle, who's obviously, you know, he's went on to do great things in movies and continues to do so. But you have Alex Garland, which is a name that's super interesting. And if you've been following any of the work I do on this feed as pertains to Opera Omnia, you'll know that we just finished a series on Alex Garland, who only has 3 movies to his name, but by God, are those 3 movies kind of fucking incredible. He directed Ex Machina, which is a kind of sci-fi, I would say science fiction, cusping on horror movie, one we might cover somewhere down the road. He did Annihilation, which made its kind of proper debut on Netflix. And then his previous movie was for A24, which was called Men, and that came out last year, and it was absolutely stunning. So you've got him behind the script and the story, and he's an incredible writer. He's worked with Boyle quite a few times. You've got a great cast and an incredible score. You've got music that was composed by John Murphy. You've got stuff by Godspeed You, Black Emperor, Brian Eno. It all kind of ties in really well together, and it adds to this powerful experience. There are a few shots in this movie that are jaw-droppingly incredible. One of them is, of course, the crossing of the London Bridge, which the bridge was closed at night to, well, early hours of the morning to get this shot. And anyone that's ever been in London knows that that bridge is never empty. So it's one of those things where it really adds to the idea that the world is not as we remember it, and people are gone. But there are other scenes that are just designed to add tension, which is all the way throughout this movie. It's a great scene in an underpass where a like sea of rats are powering down because they're trying to get away from the danger being the infected. The idea of the infection here I really like, because it's the aggression. The aggression that's transmitted as a virus is the response to the subjugation, I suppose is probably a word we could use here. But it's being a viewer of nothing but the trauma and violence that we as a species have caused. And you can kind of see, weirdly, and I don't want to put my tinfoil cap on, is if you're only subjected to violence and fear, you act out violently. That's why you get riots. That's why you get insurrections. And that's all kind of led from this. So the idea that they actually physically weaponize it into a virus in this movie, I think is kind of poignant, and it works incredibly well to the benefit of the movie. So once again, I think that's really, really good. It's got a relatively short running time, but not as short as I remembered. Sitting down to watch it this time around, it's a quick movie. Anytime you watch 20 Days Later, it zips along fast, but it's actually just under the 2-hour mark. It's like a shade under, maybe about 5 minutes under 2 hours, including the credits. And that's long for a zombie movie, maybe not by today's standards, but certainly in 2002, that was kind of pushing things out a little bit beyond what you would expect for a movie like this. But actually, I think that the pacing works perfectly in this one and really kind of lands its way through. I think overall its impact post this movie is almost instantly felt within what, like a year and a bit, where we get the Dawn of the Dead remake, where we're actually following the idea of the kind of running zombies. I don't think without this movie Shaun of the Dead would have happened. I think Shaun of the Dead, which came out the same year as the remake of the Dawn of the Dead remake, I think that's almost because there's a sudden interest again. I actually don't think without 28 Days Later you get movies like Zombieland. Even to an extent, I don't think you get The Walking Dead. I think The Walking Dead is because this movie reset the interest. On top of that as well, it gave us a kind of, I was going to say direct sequel, a sequel of sorts in 28 Weeks Later, which came out a few years later and once again had the same team behind it. Not in the directing this time, but certainly in the producer role, you have Alex Garland and Danny Boyle kind of pushing things through with another stellar cast, you know, Robert Carlyle and Imogen Poots. And Jeremy Renner as well, a tiny role for Idris Elba. And that's actually, I think that's a super solid sequel. I really enjoy the idea of cowardness and how that's kind of, how that clings to us and haunts us and how it's difficult to live with. It almost makes us sick. And up until recently, and the last few months, so this has been a story that's been flying around for years now, it did look like a 28 months later was going to happen, but I now believe that that's been shelved. There is a push, certainly, and will always be a push for a 28 years later. I don't know if that will ever happen. All I know is they managed to capture it twice, lightning in a bottle twice with both these movies, but this one in particular is hugely important and continues to have prominence. It's difficult to talk about the 2000s as a decade for horror and not have 28 Days Later right up there in the conversation as one of the better but yet more important movies of the decade. So there you go. Hang around to the end of the episode and I will give you the deets on how you can submit your review in for 28 Days Later. But before we get to that, we have a couple of reviews that have come in from dear listeners here on our previous movie, The Last Night in Soho. Up first, written review coming in from our good buddy Tim Walker, who says, "Dear Duncan and Teapots Collective Folk, we're back after a hiatus. You had a hiatus, Duncan, and I sure as hell did. From March through May, I had a bit of a rough stretch. Knee surgery, then other health issues, and then insurance issues. The American healthcare system absolutely sucks, in case you didn't know. Even with insurance, they charge you an arm and a leg, then they screw up and charge you even more for the screw-ups. Then my girlfriend lost her cat, my car broke down, and I've had to have a tree in my yard taken down before it fell over and hurt someone or smashed a house or a car. It's amazing that I was even able to do a review for Primer during that stretch. Sorry I didn't like it, but I did admit it might not be the movie's fault. So anyway, don't feel bad about the delay, Duncan. I may very well have been too busy or exhausted to write this review over that stretch anyway. Now that's halfway through June, my bad luck seems to have temporarily given me a rest for now, and now I can watch a few movies. Last Night in Soho I had seen before in theatres. Apparently I was one of a few since it wasn't a big hit as I recall. I can't figure out why movie studios even put out horror films in November. They rarely do well. Even movies as good as Doctor Sleep or Overlord more or less bombed in the theatres. I'm 100% convinced had they and Soho been released in October or in the summer, they would have had a much more successful run. Hell, a lot of horror films have been doing well in January, February or March releases over the last several years. November just isn't a good time, even for a strong movie. Anyway, I dug it then. I dug the style first and foremost, plus the groovy 60s soundtrack. I can't think of this movie without thinking of Downtown by Petula Clark and vice versa. I like the characters except for Matt Smith's and the first roommate, but they're supposed to be the shitheads. They were a bit over the top, especially the roommate, but it didn't ruin the movie. Great performances, gorgeous cinematography and a compelling story. I'm totally with you, Duncan, that this isn't a giallo, but definitely has some giallo influences, much like Malignant. Also, I can see the influence of some of those crimmy films from West Germany in the 60s as well. Duncan, it didn't really occur to me until you brought up, but this movie qualifies as being a time travel film. You're absolutely right. It is, but not in a standard way. It's supernatural rather than science fiction, but it is still people being transported to the past. I think I had two complaints, that it was far too long and it took too long to get going. One could also take issue with the possible confusing or contradictory lesson about living in the past or nostalgia. Is this movie pro or con? Or is it just saying it's more complicated than people usually think when they talk about it? as the old commercial during American football games in the 80s used to say, you make the call. So how about this watch? I felt much the same about the positives, though I did feel the full 2 hours this time. It's far too long. It takes too long to get going. The movie could easily lose 15, 20 or even 30 minutes off its runtime and not lose any of its impact. Quite the opposite. I did dig the style just as much, if not more, this time. I love the classic gothic horror ending with the house on fire. It's the same sort of thing you'd see at the end of, say, The House of Usher, The Mill and the Stone Woman, or The Plague of Zombies. That's a good way to win me over. Right up my alley, and another 60s reference when you think about it. All those movies came out in the 60s. Speaking of Hammer films like Plague of the Zombie, I did recognise the grandmother character played by Rita Tushingham. She was a lead in one of the early 70s Hammer thrillers called Straight Until Morning, which, though set in the early 70s, was a very swinging 60s in style. Also, her character in that was similar in a lot of ways to Mackenzie's in this. Obviously, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if Edgar Wright was a fan. I can recommend Straight On Till Morning if you don't mind a psychological thriller. That is, if you don't mind a movie that's still pretty darn similar to Peeping Tom at times. Peeping Tom is another movie that has 60s style all over it. As for the message of the movie, I'm leaning towards it being that nostalgia or living in the past is complicated. There were legit great things in the past like pop culture, fashion, music, movies, but there was also some pretty nasty things too. Praise the good, but at least acknowledge the evil, or it will haunt you. That's my take anyway. You make the call. On my first watch, I gave Last Night in Soho 4 stars out of 5. I was tempted to knock it down to 3.5, but I think I'm going to keep it at a 4. By the way, I love the movie poster for this film. The white one. I just saw it in Letterboxd. It's right out of a 60s mystery thriller, like an early giallo or crimi film, which were kind of an older cousin to the gialli. Maybe a little like an early Jess Franco film too. Very 60s, very stylish. Works great for this film. Next up is 28 Days Later, and I really hope I don't let you down with this one, Duncan. Just to warn you now, so you don't lose your shit. I haven't seen the movie in 20 years and I didn't like it then. It's one of those popular movies that I just didn't get or get into. Maybe a rewatch may change it though. It's happened before. Until then, I tell my Teapots Collective friends to take care, stay safe. And while it's tempting to move out on your shallow, shitty roommate, be careful where you go. Tim. Thanks very much, Tim, for your review. Very sorry to hear about all the bad luck that you've been experiencing as of late. And hopefully that's in the past. You can pick up the pieces and move forward to bigger, brighter and better things, buddy. Always, always positive thoughts from me to you. Our second and final review comes in from a long-time collaborator to everything that I've done, one Mr. David Garrett Jr., who sent an audio review in, and David says...
Hello, Duncan and Teapots Collective listeners. David Garrett Jr. here once again for Where to Begin with Time Travel Horror. So this one, Duncan, is one that I have seen before. I got to see this actually at a like sneak preview thing at the Gateway Film Center of Last Night in Soho. So this is one that I was actually really excited for when it got caught up in that pandemic pushback. And I actually kind of like gave up worrying about it because, you know, it is what it is. And I just knew that Edgar Wright was a writer and director that I enjoy. He was in a movie that had giallo vibes and I was in. This is actually one that Jamie went and saw with me. And this is my second watch, which I've been meaning to do, just haven't had a chance to get around to it. So thank you for that. So what's interesting here is kind of how this becomes a time travel movie, as there's elements of being like a haunted house ghost type thing there with some neo giallo feel, but the stuff with the ghosts are actually our main character of Eloise has psychic abilities and she sees her deceased mother, and I like how we establish that right there in the beginning. Now her grandmother is worried about her moving to London, as these are the two most important person in Eloise's life. And her mother tried to go and kind of failed, or just it was too much for her. So her grandmother is worried about this happening to her granddaughter. So then this gift that Eloise has makes her dream of Sadie, who is portrayed by the beautiful Anya Taylor-Joy. I should say that Ellie is portrayed by Thomasin McKenzie. And at first, these dreams that Ellie is having are great. The darker the plight of this young woman, though, the more trouble that it makes Eloise. we get the idea that her gift allows her to have these like vivid dreams where she's living them out. So that's what kind of makes this an interesting little time travel type movie. But the deeper that she gets into this, the stronger the manifestations begin and start to get. Now, Ellie sees Sadie and the different men that she met even outside of the room that she was renting. The more that we get into the story, the more she connects the dots on what happened. So it all becomes a giallo type thing here where she has to do this investigation to try to figure things out because the police don't believe her. Now, I did want to go into this giallo stuff a little bit more as well, as we have the neon of the 1960s London. There's a sign outside of Ellie's window. Then also some good effects in that room. Now, the movie introduces a bit of sleaze that she's uncovering during her investigation. Now, at first, she knows she can't go to the police, as I was saying. So she decides to find the truth herself, and these are all elements of that subgenre. And we also have some deaths by a knife if you want to go there as well. Now, before moving away from the story, I do want to go into a bit of social commentary here. The first part would be the idea of supernatural versus mental illness. No one else can see Ellie's mother. Now, her grandmother, Peggy, believes that her granddaughter, you know, does and says things. It is revealed that her mother had a history of depression amongst other ailments. I'm assuming she also had a similar gift to her daughter. Now, as Ellie descends into madness, the logical explanation is she's just losing it. Thought that fit well for what was needed. We also get a scene where she's questioned if she's been drugged or not, which is socially relevant there, and kind of as a correlation to what happens with Sadie. Now, we also see the dark side of show business with this other character. I feel horrible for what happens to her. Now, how the movie oversees it is interesting, and it blurs the lines of good versus bad. We also get the effects of bullying with Ellie and her classmates as she's going to design school to become a designer, of course. So I thought the acting here is great. Mackenzie works so well as our lead. I love how we see her all just bright-eyed and bushy-tailed as she gets to London, and then how it just gets her claws into her, and we see where it takes her there. Taylor Joy is also amazing. Seeing what she goes through is heartbreaking. Trying to figure out her fate had me glued to the screen that first time, and the second viewing was kind of fun to try to piece things together and see what I might have missed. I thought Rigg was solid in her role. That would be Diana Rigg. Same goes for Michael Ajao, who is trying to help out Ellie, as he is somebody who really cares about her. We also have the great Terrence Stamp in here as a, you know, kind of a minor character. We don't necessarily know if we can trust him or something like that. Then there is, of course, Matt Smith. I thought the rest of the cast around them are kind of just grounding everything out for what was needed. I did want to include here that Wright is great at selecting good actors who play complicated characters. It makes you question your morals and who you should side with when it comes to the past. Other than that, the filmmaking here is amazing. Coming in, I knew that Wright was being behind this, that it would be. This is shot beautifully. I think the giallo elements also help there. The effects we get are solid. We don't get a lot of them, but we also don't necessarily need them. What is most impressive, though, are the shots with the mirrors, and we get to see like Sadie and Eloise just being interchanged. That was impressive. The blood that we get looks good. We also got some surreal things as well that I enjoyed. I also thought the soundtrack fit for what was needed for that era. So in conclusion, the first time I saw this, it blew me away, and I would say even more so the second time around. I even tried to temper my expectations, and this exceeded them. The concept is an interesting one. I like incorporating a neo-giallo with the haunting aspects of the movie. There's also an interesting message here that deepens the story. The acting was good across the board. How this looks was great. The effects helped there, and the soundtrack suited what was needed. This, I gave my highest rating the first time without a second watch. My rating actually stayed the same, but that isn't a slight to this movie by any stretch. So Duncan, my rating here for Last Night in Soho is going to be a 4.5 out of 5 on the T-Put scale. And Duncan, can't wait for the next episode, as the next movie we're going to be covering here of 28 Days Later, one that I haven't watched for a decent amount of time and everything like that, so it's always one that I've come back to. It's, you know, one that I actually saw in the theater, so I don't think there's anything else I need to say here. Can't wait to hear the episode and hear what everybody else's thoughts are on Last Night in Soho. This is David Garrett Jr., and I am signing off.
And thanks to David Garrett Jr. for his review. Always good to hear from you, my friend. Okay. Let's talk about where we're going in this coming month's episodes and the time scales there within. We are playing a bit of catch up, so I'm going to be essentially dropping two of these episodes in August. So you're going to have a couple of weeks, and then a couple of weeks, and then we'll get back to our one a month schedule. So let me give you some information first about where we're turning our attention next. The next movie we will be covering on Where to Begin With as part of our man-made infection you know, what have I wrought upon the world, cause and effect. I think of a snappier name probably by the time that all these sections are finished. The next movie we'll be covering in the sci-fi horror one is a creature feature, actually. And no, it's not Godzilla, although we could have totally done Godzilla. We are doing instead a little South Korean number. The movie is The Host, surprise surprise, directed by Oscar winner Bong Joon-ho from 2006. A kind of horror comedy of sorts, creature feature, sure. But yeah, this is the next one here. As you are all aware, the creature in this movie is created from some careless dumping of chemicals by the American military. And that's all I'm saying about that. I don't think this will be a first time watch for any of the listeners out here. This one's a pretty famous one, but I'm looking forward to hearing your reviews anyway. So that is the next one we'll be covering. And let me fill in all the details in between. If you want to submit your review of 28 Days Later, it has to be in no later than Friday the 11th of July. So that's just over 2 weeks, Friday the 11th of July. The episode featuring The Host review from myself and your reviews of 28 Days Later will drop on Sunday the 13th. Sunday the 13th of August. So you have to get your review in no later than Friday the 11th of August, and then the episode will drop on Sunday the 13th. And that's you all set up. Thank you very much for checking out this episode of Where to Begin With. We'll be back in a couple of weeks' time with your reviews and my review of a brand new movie. Until then, please take care wherever you are, and I'll speak to you next time.